after I know and love you guys for so long, I still am so nervous. It's okay, but it's okay. Gets all scrambled up. Well, so we're about halfway through the season for nonviolence. This is the 23rd season for nonviolence, and if you don't know, this is a 64-day season that honors the lives and deaths of Martin Luther King Jr. and Mahatma Gandhi, and also the life of the Dalai Lama. 1 year ago, I was broadcasting on doing daily broadcasts on Facebook Live called 64 Days and 64 Ways to Foster Peace and Live Nonviolently. And today, a year later, God, especially after coming through these last 2 years, and now with the war in Ukraine, it seems like that vision for a peaceful, nonviolent world just seems farther and farther from fruition. But the good news is that despite appearances, nothing could be farther from the truth. And in fact, at this time in the evolution of human consciousness, and with the understanding of our connectedness through quantum physics, the increasing awareness of our interdependence, a peaceful, nonviolent world is not only possible, it is inevitable. I've come to realize now, as many of you have, that the world we seek is not going to happen through sanctions, through treaties, and through ceasefires. History shows us that war is not really caused by our governments. And so a peaceful world is not really going to be achieved through our governments. All governments really do, if you think about it, is create the infrastructure for humans to wage war. The true cause of conflict and war around the world is the peace, is the hatred and the prejudice in the hearts of individuals. The war in Ukraine right now is the result of one man's avarice and disregard for human life, which could end up costing tens of thousands of lives. There's a Chinese proverb that says, war does not determine who is right, war determines who's left. So what exactly is the art of peace? Well, first of all, it's a classic well-known book from Morihei Ueshiba. He's considered the world's greatest martial artist, and he's the inventor of the martial arts style known as Aikido. And Aikido is a very non-violent defensive form of martial arts that focuses on resolving conflicts, not starting them. So Risha says in his book, The Art of Peace, excuse me, to injure an opponent is to injure yourself. To control aggression without inflicting injury, that is the art of peace. And that is the essence of nonviolence. But today I'm going to use the art of peace more as a metaphor for building a lasting peace, for building a masterpiece. A masterpiece, because if we've seen throughout history and we're seeing right now, creating a lasting peace, it truly is an art. And until we can get to the root cause of the conflict in our world, we will always have what I call a paint-by-numbers peace. Something that looks good, but has no really lasting value. And that's because, you know, government-sanctioned peace is most always based on the idea of tolerance. And tolerance means that we just put up with something we don't like. Tolerance is behavior-based. It doesn't require any change from the inside out on the individual. Dr. Martin Luther King put it this way. He said, nonviolence means avoiding not only external physical violence, but also internal violence of the spirit. You not only refuse to shoot a man, you refuse to hate him. So refusing to hurt someone, that's tolerance. That's the paint by numbers piece. But refusing to hate, that requires transformation of the heart from the inside out. That's how we create the masterpiece. And you're reading that right. The Mona Lisa recently is priced at nearly $1 billion, $908 million. That is a masterpiece. So how do we come together to paint this masterpiece? How do we empower ourselves to participate in co-creating peace in times like this, when we're sitting here thousands of miles away from a war and wondering, what can I do to help? Well, we're taught in Unity and in New Thought that everything begins in consciousness. And there are arguably two fields of consciousness operating in the world today. The first is our individual consciousness, okay? And that is what's going on up here. That's the collection of thoughts, ideas, and impressions that we've collected throughout our lifetime that are the cause producing the effects and conditions in our lives. We call it our unity third principle. We create the world by the thoughts we think. What we think about, we bring about. Thoughts held in mind produce after their kind. But there's also a collective consciousness, a global consciousness. Unity co-founder Charles Fillmore called it the race consciousness. And this is the collection of trillions of thoughts and ideas and impressions collected throughout human history that are the cause producing the effects and conditions in our world. Okay, it's the answer to the age-old question, if God is all good and all-knowing, why is there so much pain and suffering in the world? Well, the pain and suffering and violence we perceive in the world is the byproduct of our collective consciousness. It is happening because, on some level, we have agreed that it is okay to have violence, to have prejudice, and to have hunger and wars. It's simply the results of thoughts held in mind, producing after their kind on a global scale. So I like to think of this planet basically as having its own consciousness. And each one of us is one of those thoughts and ideas and impressions that make that consciousness up. Are you following me so far? Okay. So for those of you who are part of Christopher Naughton's awesome class, we looked at the question of whether consciousness exists outside of our own minds. In other words, can there be a global consciousness that connects us all? And we saw a lot of compelling proof direct from the experts in the field that there definitely is something intangible that connects us. And that something can definitely have an effect on all the established systems in the world. This idea that consciousness exists outside of ourselves, it was first floated way back in the late 1890s, during the Transcendental Movement. But the idea was brought more to the forefront in the late 1970s with what became known as the 100th monkey effect. Everyone familiar with that? Okay, so briefly, if you're not familiar with it, there are scientists who are studying macaque monkeys off the Japanese island of Kashima. And they observed that many of the monkeys would not eat the sweet potatoes that they left out for them because they were covered in sand. But one day, an 18-month-old female, that's about middle-aged female for them, she could solve the problem by taking the sweet potatoes to the ocean and washing them there and then eating them. Well, this practice started to spread, okay? And it spread to, say, for argument's sake, to 99 monkeys. But one day, Tuesday morning at 11 o'clock, the 100th monkey picked up on the idea, took a sweet potato, washed it in the ocean, and by the end of that day, every monkey on the island had learned to wash their sweet potatoes, even the ones that hadn't been shown or had been exposed to the practice. And even more surprising was the claim that very same day that idea jumped over the ocean to the other islands where macaques were, and they started washing their sweet potatoes. In other words, there was a spontaneous, mysterious leap of consciousness that happened when an allegedly critical mass point was reached. That added energy of that 100th monkey tipped the scales and created this ideological breakthrough within the consciousness of the macaque tribes. Now later on, this idea was opposed, and it turned out that it was proven more to be more of a metaphor than a fact. But you know, remember the butterfly effect and how cute that was when it came about? A little butterfly can flap its wings and create a tornado in Texas, ha ha ha. Well, now that little butterfly effect is an official law. And it has been proven that is true. And I think the same with the 100th monkey effect is also being proven by groups like the Global Consciousness Project and the research that's been presented by Lynn McTaggart in her book, The Intention Experiment. Both of these present compelling evidence that we are connected by an invisible energy field that we each contribute to and that we're each influenced by. McTaggart says that it appears the most essential ingredient in creating our universe is the consciousness that observes it. The most essential ingredient in creating our universe is the consciousness that is observing it. In other words, reality is not fixed. It's fluid and mutable, and hence possibly open to influence. So McTaggart's research brings up the question, what if a single thought can heal the world? What if a single thought can heal the world? So I thought I would have some fun with this idea. Are you ready to have some fun with me? Yeah. Considering that each of us is a thought, an idea, or an intention contributing to the global race consciousness, I imagine that the human race was a single person. So join me in this. This is what he looks like. We're going to call him Hugh. Last name, Man. Okay? And then I extended this kind of metaphor to include the Earth, maybe the Earth representing Hugh's physical body, right? The atmosphere could be his immune system, the rainforests are his lungs, the rivers are his bloodstream, you know, you got your ice caps right here, and they're thinning too, so. And I imagined every race and culture adding its own flavor to what would be Hugh's personality, right? Africa could represent the soul of Hugh, and America could be the prosperity consciousness. East India, maybe the spirituality. The Middle East would represent our dual natures, you know, how well Hugh plays with others, and so on. So you could have some fun with the idea. But with that in mind, I asked the question, who is Hugh? Okay, who is this guy if he were a single person? Would Hugh be a man or a woman? Is Hugh young or old? Is Hugh someone you'd want to be friends with? What kind of meds might Hugh be on? Maybe antidepressants or Xanax, right? Would Hugh be having money problems? Right? Considering the effects of global warming right now, would Hugh be healthy? Would he be overweight, starving, you know, bald or tan? It's an interesting exercise, keeping in mind that Hugh is someone we are all creating together. Unity co-founder Charles Fillmore said in his book, Mysteries of Genesis, it's found that what is true for the creation of the universe is equally true in the unfoldment of man's mind and body, because man is a microcosmic copy of the grand man of the universe. So that prompted the next question. I wanted to ask, if Hugh were me, what would the world be like? And this is me as Hugh, there we are. It's in my prime at Unity Village right there. If I were indeed a microcosm of the macrocosmic consciousness and I were able to superimpose my consciousness onto Hugh's, how would that change our friend Hugh? How would that change life on the planet? Would there still be conflict in the Middle East? In other words, how well do I provide a place in my consciousness where my dual natures can exist? Would there be starvation in Africa or India? In other words, how well do I feed my own soul? Whatever wars I'm fighting in my life are manifesting as wars around the world. Resentments, unforgivenesses I hold manifest as judgments and conflict on the planet. Whatever abundance or lack I'm manifesting in my life would be reflected in our global economy. If the Earth were my body, how would the planet be getting along right now? Would there have been a pandemic? Seeing myself as a microcosm of the global consciousness can be very revealing, yes? Especially if you do it, practice this yourself. So with that in mind, I decided to take the third leap and ask myself the question, and I'd like you to join me in this one. What would I be willing to change for the benefit of Hugh? Assuming I could superimpose my consciousness over Hugh's, what would be the first thing I would change about myself to create a more peaceful and nonviolent world? If I knew that every time I meditated, I created more peace and calm in the world, would I do it? As I become more kind and compassionate and forgiving to others, people around the world would begin to treat each other with respect and dignity. Would I really make that effort to heal those relationships? If I knew that if I took care of my body and fasted and nurtured myself and exercised, that our streams and lakes and air would become cleaner, would that finally be the motivation I need to make those changes in my life? And this is a really important question for all of us to ask ourselves, because friends, on some level, that is exactly what is happening. What we hold in our individual consciousness is added as a thought to the race consciousness, and that can be very empowering, and here's why. We all know the story of Miss Myrtle Fillmore, Unity's other co-founder. She changed her entire consciousness with one thought, with a single idea that she heard from E.B. Weeks. I am a child of God, so I do not inherit sickness. She thought she had inherited her multiple sclerosis. Tuberculosis, thank you. She thought she had inherited that. But this thought changed everything that she thought about herself and the world, and she began sending healing thoughts to her body every day, focusing on each cell, each organ of her body, until it reached that 100th monkey tipping point, and her entire body became aligned with that idea and with that thought. Have you ever encountered a single thought or a single idea that completely changed the way you thought or acted? I know I have. For me, it was, there's only one presence and one power in my life and in the universe, God the good, omnipotence. That thought was very mind-blowing for a young Catholic man. And it created this domino effect in my brain and my consciousness that totally changed the way I related to God, totally changed the way I related to myself, and the way I related to others. That one statement, that one idea, helped me come into my power as a divine expression of God. A microcosm of the macrocosm. Everything in my life shifted when I embraced that one new thought. And in the same way one thought can change our consciousness, the same is true for you. One thought can also create a domino effect that can alter the way Hugh thinks and behaves. Think of Jesus. Think of Jesus as one thought that changed the entire collective consciousness. One truth-based, pure, loving, accepting thought that changed the world. Steve Jobs was certainly a unique and powerful thought in the global consciousness that changed the way the entire world thinks and communicates. Osama bin Laden, another thought with a completely different intention that changed the consciousness of the planet, did it not? And today, the one thought that is Vladimir Putin has echoed throughout our collective consciousness. Whether that thought is allowed to take root in Hugh's head is really up to us right now, isn't it? Because you, my friends, in fact, any one of us can be that one thought in Hugh's consciousness that changes it. Any one of us could be that metaphorical 100th monkey. Mahatma Gandhi said that the pure love of one soul can offset the hatred of millions. The pure love of one soul can offset the hatred of millions. Just look around the sanctuary and take a look at the millions and millions of souls, the hatred we could offset in the world with just the love that's in this room right now. So the masterpiece shows us that true lasting peace starts with individual transformation, not changing the circumstances around us. We're each a brushstroke in that masterpiece, a microcosm of a world we wish to create. Gandhi's most famous quote, "Be the change you wish to see in the world," but I say, "Be that one thought that changes the world." I think we're a little behind on the slides there, but it's okay. I wanted to include, there he is, the pure love of that, and then, be the thought that, there it goes. I wanted to include myself there next to all of these great people. Be the one thought that changes the world, ladies and gentlemen. Be the one loving thought that offsets the hatred of millions. Be the 100th monkey that tilts the balance and creates that breakthrough. Howard Thurman famously said, "By transforming consciousness, we participate in the transformation of the world." That just sums it up. Yeah. By transforming consciousness, we participate in the transformation of the world. He didn't say our consciousness. He didn't say global consciousness. But we can think of them both as one now. We know that through science and that the work you do to become a more peaceful, loving person does ripple out into the rest of the world. Your efforts to become better for the greater good of all is never wasted despite appearances. It's the most empowering thing we can do in these times where we feel so helpless. So I want to close with this quote from Rihei Rishba from his book, The Art of Peace. "The art of peace begins with you. Work on yourself and your appointed task in the art of peace. You are here for no other purpose than to realize your inner divinity, manifest your inner enlightenment, foster peace in your own life, and then apply it to the art in all that you encounter. Let's prepare now for meditation. So we take a deep breath together, and we exhale that breath, bringing our attention into this moment where we may all connect. Just as there's an individual consciousness and a global consciousness, there's a consciousness, a group consciousness working in this room right now. And we connect to that in this moment. I am a single thought, idea, or impression in the one mind, the global collective consciousness. I know that a single thought can affect that consciousness, just as a single thought can affect my own. Today, I choose to add only peaceful, nonviolent thoughts to this consciousness. Today, I choose not to add energy of judgment, conflict, prejudice, or greed to the energy of this consciousness. Today, I choose to let only my highest expression of love, acceptance, kindness, and compassion direct my thoughts. And I know that that thought energy joins the energy of millions of others around the world who join in this same thought. I affirm that today I am part of a growing idea, a new thought that will reach its critical mass and transform the entire planet. I know that in this moment I am in alignment with all of the energy of the divine, which supports and expresses this idea out into the world. And I take this knowing deep into my heart space, where I remain for just a few moments in communion with my brothers and sisters in silence. I choose to add only peace and love into the collective consciousness, knowing that I am contributing to the transformation of the world into the creation of a world free of war and violence, to a world that works for all. For this, we are grateful. We send this current of gratitude forth into the one mind to fulfill its inevitable goal now, in this moment. Attention back into this space. We open our eyes and we agree that this is so, and we make it so by saying, "And so it is," together. And so it is.
Flow, Spirit, flow through me as I open up to be an expression of your unfolding peace. Show, Spirit, show through me as I